Good afternoon, everyone. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order on Tuesday, May 9th. It is 3:43 p.m. Apologize for the delay. We just got stuck away in another state business. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courteous. Committee members present today are Senator Tobin, Vice Chair Kaufman, Senator Geisel, and Senator Dunbar. And myself, Senator Wilson, we do have a quorum to conduct business this afternoon. We have one item of business on our agenda, House Bill 60. We first heard a hearing on this bill on May 2nd. This House Bill 60 is Runaways, Department of Family and Community Services, Department of Health, Duties, Licensing, and Information, which is sponsored by Senate Rules on the request of the governor. At the table before us, we have Cece Crayley, Department of Law, and we have Heather Carpenter with the Department of Health before us. Would you guys care to give any opening statements or a brief overview of just what this bill does in a very short, compact, as a refresher for members that might be watching newly?
For the record, Heather Carpenter, Department of Health, and just for the committee members, as a short reorientation, HB 60 is really our cleanup from Executive Order 121 that the governor had last session that separated the Department of Health and Social Services into the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services. Through this bill, the main things we are doing is cleaning up the licensing with runaway shelters to make it clear that it is the Department of Health that licenses those. And we're adding the commissioner of the Department of Family and Community Services as a statutory advisor to the Trust Board of Trustees. And we are also ensuring that there is information sharing between the two departments prior to how all of the divisions work together. So an example, just high level of why this is important, are some of the many complex patients or vulnerable adults we are serving, and making sure someone in the Pioneer Home can talk with the program staff at Division of Behavioral Health and Healthcare Services, just to ensure that we are, that is just clear that that's the expectation of how our employees work together and that we are still all under HIPAA.
Thank you. And also, for any questions, we do have the two ledge liaisons from both the departments also here as well. Are there any questions for the department at this time? Seeing none, we will go ahead and open public testimony. Is anyone here in the room in Juneau like to testify on House Bill 60? Seeing none, and seeing no one online, we will go ahead and close public testimony. At this time, I would like to make a motion that we move to adopt a previous version of this bill. That would be version S in Sierra. Now, this version is a bill that does not include language that was added as for the last on the House floor, and it moves it back to a previous version. Is there objection to moving to a previous version?
I object.
All right, we'd like to speak to your objection.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, what you would be removing is the additional language which made explanation and materials available to a minor related to human trafficking and sex trafficking. And, Mr. Chairman, I think this is information that a runaway minor should be provided with. These are not children who have lived sheltered lives. They've run away, and they are a vulnerable population, and I believe need to have this information so that they can act appropriately. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. And I believe this information is provided to those minors that are in these three facilities, as we heard. Can the department come and testify or verify to that? Speak to it at all?
For the record, Stacey Crayley, Civil Division Director, Department of Law. Mr. Chairman, in a prior committee hearing, I think we discussed that in three of these shelters, one of the shelters, which is Covenant House, is very engaged and has worked closely on these issues related to sex trafficking. I believe there was some statement made about that information was made available through these or that information was available with respect to sex trafficking, with respect to minors that are in that facility in particular. But other than that, I don't have any other information.
All right. Thank you. We have that objection. I guess we'll go ahead and take a roll call vote.
May I ask for clarification on the motion? What does a yes vote mean? What does a no vote mean, please, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. A yes vote means that you will be returning to Senate to the version S before the committee, and a no vote means we stay at version S.A.
Thank you for that clarification prior to the vote.
Can I have brief ideas, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. We are back on the record doing a roll call vote.
Senator Giesel.
No.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Tobin.
Yes.
Senator Kaufman.
Yes.
Senator Tobin.
Yes.
Senator Wilson.
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
With four yeas and one nay, we are at back to version S, Sierra. We do have an amendment, and we understand that this amendment deadline was May 4th. We did receive that one amendment from Senator Giesel's office. I know this amendment was written to version S.A, but it has the same bearing as the intent of the language is still concurrent with this current version. Minor some of the page line, so this will be offered as a conceptual amendment with the understanding that the language is still, the act of the language has not changed the meaning of the amendment. So with that, Senator Giesel.
I move amendment number one.
I'll object. Senator Giesel.
So looking at where this would fit, it continues to be on page 3, following line 30, as I compare versions S as in Sierra and SA as in Sierra Alpha. And then
taking that ease.
If you'd like, okay. Suit yourself.
We are back on the record under amendment number one that was moved by Senator Geisel. Senator Geisel.
I move amendment number one. You wishing me to speak to it? Is that what you're asking
yes.
now?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. All right. So what this amendment will do is address the concern that I have in my clinical practice with my pediatric patients. I see students in schools who are in need of behavioral health and mental health services, who desire to have those services but are unable to access them because of parents who either decline to give permission for those services for various reasons, or simply are unresponsive. The additional piece to this that addresses sections 2 and 3 of this amendment. Sections 5 and 6 address young people who are in runaway shelters. These students need to have access. These children need to have access to behavioral and mental health services. And they are not kids who are living in homes with supportive parents or guardians. These are kids that have run away. And they also need access to these services. They obviously have made some very difficult decisions in their lives, decisions that they believe will protect themselves, and these decisions can have some very very negative results if they don't access some help to work through the mental trauma that they are undergoing. And therefore, both of these sections of this amendment would authorize a student or child age 16 or older, to grant consent for themselves for behavioral health or mental health services. This has nothing to do with consent to abortion. It has nothing to do with consent for surgical procedures that might change their gender, identity. All of those are dramatic concerns that are not authorized in this amendment. So that's the purpose of the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any committee comments before we ask the bill sponsor comments on the amendment? Seeing none, bill sponsor, like to make any comments on the amendment?
For the record, Heather Carpenter, I'll just start out briefly and then I will pass it to Stacey Crayley to talk about some of the legal concerns. We appreciate Senator Geisel sharing the amendment with us in advance and talking with us, and we did share some of our concerns about bringing in provisions that may impact the Department of Education and single subject concerns, as well as just a large policy call that may have the public, the school districts, and others may want to comment on this, and just given the nature of the timing, not being able to accommodate that. So I would like to pass it to Stacey to just talk about some of the other legal concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Stacey Crayley with the Department of Law. I would like to echo Ms. Carpenter's comments, is that we appreciate the amendment and the opportunity to discuss the policy direction that Senator Geisel would like to take here. And we understand that it's an important issue that requires, for lack of a better phrase, due diligence and serious consideration. It's a change that should be carefully considered and evaluated for a whole lot of different reasons. As Ms. Carpenter mentioned, by adding this bill was designed to be a very simple cleanup bill to fix mistakes in the executive order that occurred last year As you all know, an executive order is kind of, it is what it is, and if you get it right the first time, then good for you. And if you don't have any ability to amend it during the legislative process or the legislative review of that executive order. As we discussed last year, we knew there would be mistakes. It was a big bill. It was a big executive order, had lots of moving parts, and we did have mistakes, and this bill cleans those up. It's very tight, very clean, very limited scope to just get the departments to where they need to be to do the work that they need to do. One of the concerns that we have is that if there is a challenge to this bill because of a single subject issue, and while I appreciate Senator Giesel's comment about the limited scope of her amendment, this is a big issue, and if somebody were to challenge this and the entire legislation or the entire bill kind of collapses, we don't really know what that means. And by that, I think there's potential legal risk in passing this as is. For example, right now we are fixing the idea that foster care licensing is housed in the Department of Family and should be placed in the Department of Family and Community Services. Right now it is not. That's a jurisdictional issue that could be raised in various litigation, administrative hearings, or otherwise, where an agency is taking action against a foster home or something in that to that effect, and somebody could actually challenge the jurisdictional authority of the department to take that action because one department is taking the action and they frankly do not have statutory authority as it's currently drafted. We knew that that was going to happen. Another consideration or concern, again, we haven't looked at all of the possibilities, but for example, if that were to happen, we could also be at risk of losing some federal funding. If somebody were to look at the statutory authority for, again, foster homes, they're not in the right department, the department's claiming for them. I don't understand all of those mechanisms, but those are risks that I think we need to be really aware of, and that's significant. Again, this bill was designed to be very tight, very simple, very declarative in just cleaning up some very minor issues, and we think that keeping it clean is in the best interest for these departments to move forward and to get everything in line and in order statutorily and with respect to their authorities. And these other discussions, which I think have merit and concern, are better left for further and more deliberative conversations with all involved.
Thank you. We do have a question from Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Kralik. I wanted to understand the nature of your comments. Are you making an argument about, you know, if this amendment goes through, it's a large policy call and perhaps it makes it more controversial, so it reduces the chance of passage, whether or not you believe that's true, or we think that's true, is that your concern when it comes to like losing federal funding, for example? Or is your argument that if we violate the single subject rule, that somehow it, through this amendment, that somehow it calls the whole bill into question? Because I was under the impression, and feel free to disabuse me of this notion, that sort of the policy of severability meant that if one part was found to be illegitimate because it violated that rule, it doesn't negate the rest of the laws it's passed. Is that the case or not?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I believe both of your scenarios come into play potentially. There is no severability provision in this bill, so I think that is a question as to whether or not somebody were to come in and challenge this, should it pass with this amendment and be signed by the governor, which I'm not, I have no position on that, and I don't know what the governor's position is on this amendment and whether or not he would agree with it as a matter of policy. That being said, I think there is a concern that the bill could create legal challenges and potentially the entire that portions of this or the provisions of this bill could create legal issues for the department, because maybe all of it does go down, maybe parts of it go down, but without this amendment it all survives. That's the better role for us at this time.
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
It's interesting. The single subject rule, a potential violation of the single subject rule, would seem to indicate that whatever the thing was that was inserted was legally distinct enough that it violated that rule. And so almost by definition, it would seem to not impact the other provisions. So if some entity had standing to challenge, for example, you know, the federal funding, it seems that if that issue is resolved by the existing language and this amendment violated the single subject rule, then that existing language would almost by definition have to still stand on its own, right? Because you're saying that this thing is distinct enough that it violated the single subject rule. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, that does make sense, but I'm not able to answer that question right now because of my understanding, and I'd certainly be happy to look into this and get back with you, and maybe others in the room could answer this, but I don't think I'm not sure that surgical carving is what would happen. It may happen in that way. It would depend on the challenge. It would depend upon how things were raised. I mean, and so, yes, maybe that does happen. Maybe it doesn't happen. I guess our position is this bill is tight and clean and doesn't have any of that risk without the amendment.
Senator Dunbar.
Yeah, I'll just say as a comment then, thank you, Ms. Kraler, for your answer. I think I disagree with the notion that this increases the risk of other provisions being struck down or challenged. Now, Ms. Kralik might be correct, and you know, you two lawyers, three opinions, you know. But I think there's a general policy of severability in our law where if you find one small thing wrong with a bill, it doesn't usually bring down the whole edifice, and particularly if it's on the single subject rule, because again, it seems almost like a tautology or something. If this violates the single subject rule, then by definition, it was so distinct from the rest of the bill that it can't impact that part of the bill. But this is all new to me. It's not, you know, I'm just a lowly Anchorage Assembly person learning the mysterious ways of the state legislature. So I will continue to learn more. And thank you, Ms. Kralik, for your comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the opportunity to discuss these major policy decisions in committee. I think that is the appropriate place for major policy calls to happen, and I like having the opportunity to put it on the public record. So my question to you is, in looking at this amendment, I notice that there are provisions on line 15 and again on line 11 on page 2 where it indicates that these services may be provided. They're not required to be. It's not demanding a school offers these opportunities. So I'm curious to understand the legal question of may. You indicated that this is a major policy call. It would require school districts to offer these services. And in the way that I read it, and please tell me if this is incorrect, that it actually is offering this opportunity for young people who are in crisis to get services or support that they may need and they are asking for. Is that a correct interpretation?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I don't disagree with you that the language in the bill is permissive, but again, I don't represent the Department of Education and Early Development. I don't understand how this would impact them from an operational standpoint, whether they would choose to or not choose to, what would happen if they didn't choose to. I'm not in a position to comment on that on their behalf, which is one of the other concerns we have with it, is that they're not here to articulate what this would mean for them operationally.
Any further questions from the department? Any other comments from senators?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Giesel.
So this amendment actually does fit well into this bill. The bill on page 5, section 8, talks about speaking with the minor who is seeking assistance from the program. It talks about determining what services may be necessary or appropriate to restore the minor to the minor's family, determine why they ran away. And also, it talks about provision for services necessary to promote the health and welfare of the minor in the program. This is behavioral and mental health for a child who has made a dramatic decision to run away from home. The provisions in here that relate to schools, you know, one of the safe places our kids turn to is school. One of the safe people they turn to are the teachers in those schools. One of the stable places they count on is the school being open every day, where in many cases they get food and they get adults who can help them at times when they're in significant stress in their family. And usually it's not just a student that's stressed out, it's other family members, including the parents. But the point of all this is the bill talks about confidential information. These are all things that need to have consent from the client. And in this case, it is a child. This is an opportunity to provide that child with mental and behavioral health services that actually could help keep them on track, keep them out of substance abuse behaviors, keep them out of potential criminal behaviors, as a previous amendment offered, keep them away from trafficking, sex trafficking, and things like that. So Mr. Chairman, I think this is actually a great place for this kind of amendment that would empower these students who know what they need. I mean, they may only be 16, but they're living in a situation where they've had to make some pretty grown-up decisions, Mr. Chairman. And that's the reason for offering this. I will further let you know that I did tell the governor last week that I would be offering this amendment. And he indicated that he would take a look and would let me know Monday what his thoughts were. I've not heard from him. So I guess lack of comment perhaps may or may not indicate support for this, Mr. Chairman, but this was disclosed to the governor that I would be offering this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. You know, I have offered behavioral health, mental health services in schools and within the Anchorage School District and within the Mat-Su School District. You know, I've never done it without parental consent. Normally, I would drive to a client's home in order to update a parental consent and getting updated information and form signed. I don't want to step over parental involvement in behavioral health, mental health services, concerns upon who's going to pay for services that are being rendered to minors, as they're not legally able to offer into those some of those contractual obligations. And all these services aren't, as always, cheap. For this, but I think to go back to Department of Law's concern on a single subject, when asked if this would require title change, it would require title change. So not that I don't support these services. My fear is that we would delay this piece of legislation in the terms of not being able to get concurrence, because title change requires a waiver of uniform rules, which is you need 14 in the Senate, which might be able to get there, but I don't see us getting 27 in the other body. I'm not trying to speak for them or against them. I haven't talked to any members of the other body, but just knowing sort of the politics around parental consent this year and how that might be a bit of a hot topic of concern and how things have gone in the past, I just fear that this may be caught up as a casualty of more sort of, I don't know, as politics plays in this within this building, and I will keep my objection on that reason. Any further conversation? Senator Giesel and Senator Kaufman.
I will call the committee's attention to page 2 of the amendment, recognizing that, of course, the sections would change lines 30 to 31, which will leave the parent or guardian of the minor from all financial obligations for any services under this section. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Just a comment through the chair. Having heard the concerns, I'm leaning towards a no on this amendment. With the concerns that it's raised that I don't believe we can fully vet. One of the comments earlier was that the seemed as if all minors that run away, their parents are uncaring. And I'm sure that there's a lot of parents that are wondering where their kid is and may not be aligned with this, that they may want the child, you know, back in their custody and care. And something like this may blindside them if their child is able to run away and basically enter into mental health services, which I'm sympathetic to the fact that they may need it. I'm just concerned about this, reducing the parental authority in the case where the parents that are really wondering where their child is perhaps things are going to get away from them and go a little too fast for what their wishes would be. So respectfully, I'm leaning strongly towards a no on this amendment. Thank you.
Any further conversation before we take the roll call vote? Seeing none, we'll ask the record to take the roll.
Senator Kaufman.
No.
Senator Giegel.
Yes.
Senator Dunbar.
Yes.
Senator Tobin.
Yes.
Senator Wilson.
No.
With three yeas and two nays,
the Conceptual Amendment 1 has passed, which brings us back to the main bill as amended of its version S before us. Any further comments from committee members? Any closing remarks from the sponsor? Seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Senator Kaufman.
It's the will of the committee. I move House Bill 60, version 33-GH1343/S as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. I further move that Ledge Legal is authorized to make any conforming or technical changes.
All right. Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 60, version S as amended, moves from committee with a attached individual. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the document, and just want to let folks know. If the folks would just probably stay around afterwards, we can just finish up here. That ends all our meetings that we have scheduled for this year. We just want to thank our recording secretary, Ms. Mary Gwen, for being here and being such a good work all session long with their assistants. Also want to thank our teleconference moderators throughout the year that we've had. Want to thank all the committee folks, office committee aides for coming to committees and joining us this year, and for our committee aide who went home early. We had Ms. Jody Simpson, now Ms. Martin from our office to fill in for her, and just want to thank all the committee members for working through policy in this committee all year. So thank you guys so much. Any other closing comments? Seeing none, we will be adjourned at 4:17 p.m.